Welcome to the Horses Equine Innovators Podcast, sponsored by Zoetis Animal Health. I'm your host, Stephanie Church, Editor-in-Chief at The Horse. Every day, researchers at universities and other institutions around the world are investigating new ways to care for and understand our horses in the horse industry. In this podcast series, we talk to those innovators to learn more about their work. First today, a message from our sponsor. We all know the saying, no hoof, no horse, but research also shows that many common horse behavior problems can be rooted in dental pain. Our podcast sponsor, Zoetis, encourages all horse owners to schedule an annual dental exam with their equine veterinarian. Visit zoetisus.com to learn more. Your clients' horses will thank you. And now, today's conversation with three equine innovators. As horse owners, unless we're making breeding decisions, we don't necessarily give our horses' genes a lot of thought. But genetics are essential to the health of a horse population. And ever since scientists announced the completion of the first genome map of a horse back in 2007, scientists have had the tools necessary to better answer questions about everything from coat color to inherited diseases. Today I'll be talking with Drs. Ernie Bailey and Ted Kalbfleisch of the University of Kentucky, and Dr. Jessica Peterson of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln about the Thoroughbred Genetic Diversity Project. This is a significant effort that's currently underway at their institutions, and it could change how scientists study thoroughbred genetics and how breeders and farm managers make decisions about breeding, management, and even performance. Welcome, doctors. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be here.
It's great having you. So let's find out a little bit about your backgrounds before we get started. So why don't we start with Dr. Bailey? Tell me a little bit about your background and your role and what you focus on in your research, please.
Thank you. I'm a professor at the University of Kentucky at the M.H. Gluck Equine Research Center, and I joined this department in 1980 after completing a doctoral studies at the University of California, Davis, where I was studying genetics and immunology of horses. And I was fortunate to be invited to come to this land of horses to continue my research. I teach a course in horse genetics, and I do research and graduate training in the area of horse genetics.
All right, thank you. How about you, Dr. Kalbfleisch?
I am, like Ernie, I'm a faculty member here at the University of Kentucky at the M.H. Gluck Equine Research Center. My area of expertise is a field known as bioinformatics, and it's sort of where molecular biology and computer science meet up. And what I spend most of my time doing, whether it's in research or just doing what I can to help other folks out, is to study the genomes, the genomic content of animals and humans.
Great, thank you. And Dr. Peterson, how about you?
Hi, so I'm an associate professor at the University of Nebraska. In general, my team works to identify how variation in the genome results in different traits in both cattle and horses. A large project under this umbrella in horses is a collaboration that I'm involved with Ted and others at the University of California, Davis, where we're working to identify variation in parts of the genome that aren't necessarily genes, but are critical to telling genes what to do. Also, I'm a population geneticist, and in that role, I serve on the International Society for Animal Genetics and FAO Advisory Group on Animal Genetic Diversity. And I've done past and ongoing research projects. I have past and ongoing research projects that are aimed to understand diversity within various breeds of the horse and also how those breeds are related to one another using genetic tools.
Wow, I am just bowled over by all of your expertise. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I know that the listeners are going to have a good time learning about this topic. So let's dive right into your current research. Why is it important to identify genetic variation in a population? Dr. Peterson, do you want to take this one?
Sure, that's a great question. So I think most people, when they're asked about genetic diversity, probably think about genetic diversity as something that's important to endangered species. While this is true, because we assume that populations with greater diversity are more adaptable to a changing habitat, diversity within domestic species and within breeds is a little bit different. So for instance, what makes up a breed or population of a horse is dependent upon how we have defined that. And often that's something like conformation traits, color patterns, how that horse is going to be used, or different bloodlines. So although wild populations are subject to natural selection, our horse breeds are really subject to selection for those characteristics that we decided we want that breed to have and that we deem best. So when we think about genetic variation, we have really different expectations of what genetic variation and diversity is, and is a domestic population compared to those wild populations. So that said, what I think is a really interesting challenge is that even the oldest breeds of horse are not very old at all. Horses were domesticated over 5,000 years ago, and the oldest breeds are 300 or maybe 400 years old. So we really don't have a lot of experience in managing horse breeds. We don't have a lot of years of experience in this. And these breeds now have these very defined characteristics, and they're often closed populations like the thoroughbred, which means every new thoroughbred is derived from a previous thoroughbred, and there's no new genetics that are coming into the population. So back to the question of why it's important to identify variation is we need to identify and understand what is within this population so we can use that information and then science to find means to maintain or manage that diversity in a way that is really suited to the needs of that breed.
Great, thank you. And so why is your team focusing on thoroughbreds specifically with this current research? Maybe Dr. Bailey?
Okay. Sure. Actually, this is a good topic for all breeds, and we think useful for management of everything. But we're starting with the thoroughbreds, and there's two very good reasons for that. And one is the information for thoroughbreds is, they have 350 years of pedigree information on their horses, and they've been selecting for racing performance for that period of time. And the breeders have done a very good job, and we would like to look at the genetics, the DNA, and then relate that back to the pedigrees. And so it's of great academic interest. It's a great starting point. The second reason is that thoroughbreds are very important commercially. And so there's quite a bit of value to some of the potential discoveries that we'll make.
And I'll add to that and say that we talk a lot, Ted and Ernie and I, and we get asked the question, and we're interested in the question of how has the diversity of the thoroughbred changed over the past 300 and some years? But really beyond pedigrees, we don't know. In hindsight, it would have been a tremendous resource if we had started banking DNA many, many years ago on these horses so we could use these genomic tools to answer that question. So we don't want to be in that same position 100 years from now. So I think we would be negligent if we don't start cataloging the variation in the population now, so we can better answer the questions of what is changing as we go forward in the future.
Great, thank you guys. So how did we select for breeding, and how did we study horse genetics like 20 plus years ago versus how can we do it now? Dr. Kalbfleisch?
Farm managers or breeders would have made breeding decisions. They would have taken two horses whose pedigrees they liked, and they would have crossed them to produce a foal. These pedigrees are essentially a surrogate for understanding genetic composition and how it would be passed onto this foal. So if one were looking at a four-generation pedigree, along the top line, there would be 16 horses that would be, I guess, great-great-grandsires and dams. Looking at that, one might naively assume that 1/16 of the genetic composition of each animal on that top line is given or would have been passed on to that foal, when in fact the numbers are not going to be near 1/16 at all, as certain traits in that pedigree have been selected for, selected against. Good genes will have been passed on, and bad genes will have been selectively weeded out. So best we had 20 years ago was the pedigree. Today, we can sequence and know what every base in a horse's genome is for on the order of $1,000. And we can know unequivocally if we have a sequence data for other animals in that pedigree, exactly how much genetic composition they have inherited from each animal and what they inherited. So 20 years ago, none of this existed. It was impossible. In fact, to do this very work 20 years ago would have cost on the order of $1 million. Wow. We can do it for about $1,000 now.
That's really cool. You guys have really made some giant leaps forward.
If you want to drive the price of anything through the floor, give it to the biotech industry.
Nice. That's great. So let's go back to variation. How do you go about cataloging this variation? What are you looking at and comparing specifically in a population of horses?
Good question. We have a what's referred to as a reference genome. There was a thoroughbred mare, or is a thoroughbred mare, named Twilight. She lives up at Cornell, and her genome was sequenced and assembled, which is a different process from just sequencing. So that is a much more involved effort. In fact, your listeners might remember the Human Genome Project that cost $2.3 billion and took about 10 years to do. Today, we're able to generate a reference quality genome for about $25,000. But in short, what one does is one generates this reference quality genome that will have all the nucleotides on every chromosome mapped out. And then one would take a blood sample or some other piece of tissue from some other horse and would sequence their DNA, and this is this would cost about $600 to do the sequencing, about $400 to do the analysis, where that data will be mapped to the reference, and we will know how that animal differs from the reference animal. And every animal that is sequenced subsequently, we can then compare how those animals in the entire population are similar or differ from one another based on how they compare to this reference genome.
That's great, thank you. Twilight is a very important mare.
Yes, she is.
It seems, yes. So can you give an example of some variants that have been found in other species, and what types of doors discovery of these has opened?
Yeah, so in humans, we know of the example of sickle cell anemia, where there is one nucleotide change, and if you have this one nucleotide change and you're heterozygous for it, meaning you only have one copy, then you carry the sickle cell trait. So why is this thing stuck around all these years? Because it confers resistance to malaria and is kind of a good thing to have if you live in an area where malaria is common. But if you get two copies of this, you get sickle cell anemia, and that is a bad thing. So that's a genetic disease that we've known about and we understand very well. Another that came on that we worked out maybe 20 or so years ago, where it was the ApoE allele for early onset Alzheimer's. So the discovery of these alleles and their attribution to a particular disease or trait is something that requires an enormous amount of research, an enormous amount of funding, and is really very difficult to do. Many of the traits that we look at are going to be complex, meaning that there isn't just a single nucleotide that is responsible for them. And, you know, many genes act in concert to produce the particular trait that you're looking at. And to make things more complicated, if, you know, you're trying to understand what makes one horse great, or what makes horses great, it may in fact be true that what makes one horse great is genetically very different from what makes another horse great. You know, working out, you know, just how all of these genes work together is a really very difficult endeavor, but that's what we're all about.
I'd like to point out actually that this is an opportunity that's quite different. I've been doing this for 40 years, and 40 years ago when we started, most of our research was directed at determining whether or not a trait was hereditary. And the advice that we could give breeders was simply avoid this particular line. And with the whole genome sequencing, it's changed things dramatically. I mean, as Ted says, we can focus in and identify a specific variant that has the impact. We can identify individuals that perhaps come from a line that is known to have a particular trait and either select for it, the actual gene, or select against the actual gene. We can identify them very specifically. So it in the last 15 to 20 years, the way that we can do genetics has changed profoundly.
That's very interesting. Dr. Peterson, did you have anything to add?
I think with respect to this project, what both Ted and Ernie alluded to about most of the traits that we're very interested in, with the thoroughbred being performance and health, they're very complex. And so they're driven by many, many gene variants. And the first step is to know what variants are present. And that's why this project is so important, because that's the first step that we can accomplish that will lead us on this path to being able to identify how they work together to create superior or inferior horses, or horses that excel in one aspect of performance versus another.
Thank you. So could someone tell me about the mechanics of the Thoroughbred Diversity Project? How many horses' genomes will you be sequencing? How are you going to select those horses, and how will you use that data moving forward?
Well, it's an infrastructure project. What we want to do is to create a database that can be used by many researchers to investigate a diversity of questions. And the goal is to identify as much of the existing variation that exists in the thoroughbred breed as possible. Hmm. And in order to do that, what we are doing is that we are getting samples from 2,000 thoroughbreds. We have 1,000 in hand now, and we need another 1,000. We're selecting 2,000 horses, and then we're using the pedigrees of those horses to select the 100 of those that are the most diverse. And we will do a whole genome sequencing on those. Now, the other important point in this is that the samples, the information is all anonymous. We're going to collect 2,000 samples. No one will ever know which 100 out of those 2,000 that we select. And we will do a whole genome sequence on them. There's 100 of them. And take advantage of Ted's bioinformatics skills to identify the extent of diversity. We should be able to identify variants that have a frequency of at least 5%. We should capture all of those. We should capture most of the variants that have a frequency down to 0.05. So that's the basic project.
And I have to say here that Dr. Bailey came out to the barn and took a blood sample from my horse, who's a former graded stakes winner. I'm kind of disappointed that I'm not going to know if he's going to be one of those 100 most divergent, but I am excited that we were able to participate in the study.
And the other thing I should say is that the our goal is to take the data and make the raw data basically available online in a public database so that other researchers can use the information.
And that probably saves them a lot of time and money in performing their research, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, it can take months and it can take thousands of dollars just to identify the variants. And if all they can do, and if all they need to do is to basically log on to the computer and look in 15 minutes, any undergraduate can do that.
Mm. That's great. So what additional innovations will this data make possible?
Well, I one of the things that it will do is create, as Jessica alluded to earlier, a benchmark. We'd like to know what is going on when the breeders are selecting for performance and selecting against negative traits. How does that change the breed? And it would have been nice if we knew what the genome was 20 years ago or 40 years ago and see what has happened. We'd like to create a benchmark so that 5 years or 10 years from now, we can go back and repeat the work and have an idea of what variants have become more common, what variants have been lost. There are, as I think there's been allusion to throughout this, is that there are research interests in looking at genes that may have an impact on health. There are genes that people are interested in having to do with performance. It's a complex issue, and so there is not a single gene that's responsible for successful racehorses, and we'd like to study identify as many of those as possible. One of the other applications is to gene doping, and we have colleagues that are doing research in this particular area. Gene doping is where someone identifies a gene that has an impact on performance, and one way or another integrates that into the genome of a racehorse. And that, of course, is illegal according to the rules of the International Jockey Club. In order to detect that, what you would need to have is information on all of the existing variation in the horse so that you can run an assay to identify the existence of an illegal piece of DNA.
That's interesting. So let's say I'm a breeder and this research has been completed. What would I be able to review and how would I know to adjust my strategies?
What would be best is if as a breeder you would have gotten your animals sequenced and would have access to the sequence data of the animal to which you were considering mating yours. If so, what you're able to do is essentially compare their two genomes. Now, you are not going to know, for the most part, you are not going to know exactly what the genome of the foal that you would produce would be, but what you can know is exactly how much genetic diversity you're able to retain, or have a good idea of how much genetic diversity you're able to retain in that foal, and what traits you're likely to pass on, and at what probability. So, you know, ideally, one could take these data and integrate them into a breeding program, in a way that makes it possible for people to make more well-informed decisions.
That sounds like it'll be really useful. What additional ways might this data be used that you guys are working on right now?
Well, one of the interesting applications for human genomics, people talk about personalized medicine. People have different responses to drugs. They have different susceptibilities to diseases. If you have signed up for 23andMe and had your DNA profile tested, and they might report back to you that you have a genetic predisposition to heart disease, what you might do is to react to it in a way to avoid that. You might say, I'm going to make sure I'm going to watch my weight, and I'm going to reduce salt, I'm going to do a variety of things, I'm going to get good exercise. And that might be, that would be a response to knowing that you have a genetic predisposition to that. So with horses, it may be that we can identify different predispositions in horses that may make different types of training beneficial, different types of diet beneficial. We already know that there's a gene called myostatin, and there's a variant in that that has a big impact on the success of a horse as either a sprinter or an endurance horse. So it's neither is good, but if you want a sprinter, you would like to have one particular genotype. If you want a distance horse, you want a different genotype. And these are one of the things that could happen. As we know already, there's not one recipe for being a successful racehorse. There's lots of different ways to do it. And we want to give the trainers the best opportunity to be successful.
Again, that this is a baseline of how much variation is present in the population now. And that's important because every brand new foal has from 50 to 150 new variants in their genome that neither parent had. So variation is constantly being introduced into the genome, and it's also being removed. And it's being removed because breeders are selecting horses to breed that have only good things or the best things they can find. And so we might lose variation that results in negative things. And it's also being lost just due to random chance. There's only a 50% chance that an allele will be passed on or a variant will be passed on from a stallion to its progeny. So again, now we can have that information where we can track which ones of those are being lost. So that means they might not be contributing something beneficial to that horse, and which ones are becoming more and more frequent. So this is going to allow us to then track that population, like we said, into the future. And then we can build hypotheses about what each of those variants are doing to benefit or not benefit that horse's performance.
That's cool. Thank you. So we've used a few genetic terms today, allele and nucleotide among them, and it's been a while since I've taken biology, and I have to look these up every time I write about them. So can you define those terms, please?
Well, an allele is a $2 word for a genetic variant. Each horse has two copies of most genes. One comes from the mother and one comes from the father. And if there is a change in the DNA for that gene, that is what we refer to as a variant. And the other thing that we refer to it as an allele. So so we look at the MSTN gene. I mentioned that there are two variants in MSTN. One has an impact on sprinting, one has an impact on improved endurance, and we refer to those variants as alleles, roughly the same.
Okay.
And for nucleotide, those are the individual bases that make up the genome. So in the horse genome has about 2.6 billion of these things that go one to the about 190 million of them in chromosome one, and the rest of them spread out through the other chromosomes in the genome.
Wow.
Years ago, we talked about alleles and inheritance, but we didn't talk about nucleotides because we didn't have that information. So that's the novel aspect of genetics today.
It sounds like you need about 1,000 additional samples for this project. How can horse owners get involved with this research?
Well, we would be pleased to give people the opportunity to participate, and it would help us a lot to get a diversity of samples. If people are interested, please contact me. My email address is ebailey@uky.edu, and what we would do would be to provide some blood tubes. What we would like to get is a single 10 mil blood sample. It's a fairly simple procedure to collect, and we would like the name of the horse, its year of birth, and its parents. Again, this is all very confidential. We need that in order to determine its relationship to the other horses in the population, but it goes nowhere. It doesn't show up in any records. All we're interested in doing is reporting these are extant variants that exist in horses. But if people are interested in helping us, I would be pleased to hear from them.
Thank you. I think it'd be very exciting to know that you're a part of history making with this type of research. Thank you very much, Drs. Bailey, Kalb, Fleisch, and Peterson, for sharing your time and expertise with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for having us.
I also want to thank our sponsor, Zoetis. For more from The Horse, visit thehorse.com, sign up for our newsletters, or look for Ask the Horse Live wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. If you're enjoying what you're learning, please also rate and review Equine Innovators so that other horse owners can find us. Please join us next time as we explore the horse industry equine innovators.